an interview with Jerry R. Schubel, at present the provost of the university, on leave from being director of the Marine Sciences Research Center. I will ask some of the initial questions, which are quite simple. Name, department, rank, or position?
All right, my name is Jerry Schubel. I came to Stony Brook in 1974 from Johns Hopkins University to be the director of the Marine Sciences Research Center. So let's see, in 1974, well, I'm now 52, so what, I was 38 or 39, I guess, at the time. And I had been, before coming here, I was the associate director of the Chesapeake Bay Institute at Johns Hopkins University. Mm-hmm. And that is a marine institution that has been affiliated with Johns Hopkins University since 1949. Mm-hmm. And I got my PhD from Johns Hopkins, and after getting my PhD, stayed on the research faculty at the Chesapeake Bay Institute until I left to come to Stony Brook.
Okay. Who was primarily responsible for your coming?
Well, let's see. I have to tell you a little story of that,
right,
because I was on Long Island at the Brookhaven National Laboratory, ready to accept a position to go to Brookhaven to start an oceanographic program. And in anticipation of starting that program, I was running a meeting there, and there happened to be someone from Stony Brook attending the meeting who was on the search committee. And after the meeting, he came up to me, this was Laurie McHugh, and said to me, "Would you consider Stony Brook?" And I said to Laurie, "Well, I'm really here to accept a position at Brookhaven. I've never heard of your Marine Sciences Research Center at Stony Brook." And he said, "Well, what are you doing this afternoon?" I said, "I have some free time because the meeting doesn't resume until this evening." So I came to Stony Brook. Laurie introduced me to people in marine sciences. It was such an interesting challenge. Things were in such disarray at the Marine Sciences Research Center. They hadn't had a director for 2 years.
See, who was the first director?
First director was Don Squires.
Don Squires, yes.
Don Squires had resigned and left, and there had been an acting director, Grant Gross, and Grant Gross then left, and Fred Roberts, who was the associate director, was acting as the director, although without the title. And I got so intrigued, I said, "Well, I might consider it." And so when I went back to Hopkins, I sent in a resume, and very, very quickly, I got an offer from Stony Brook to be the head of the Marine Sciences Research Center.
This came from Johnny?
This came from Johnny.
Yes.
And he and I met before that. We had a very candid discussion. I told him that if I came, I would want to build a strong center on the campus, and that the first thing I would do would be to go to the University of the West Indies and remove our support for the Discovery Bay Laboratory there. And that the second thing I would do would be to go to New Hampshire and cut off the support we were providing for the Isle of Shoals Laboratory through Cornell, because basically we didn't have anything at Stony Brook at that time of any significance. 40% of the budget was either going to the West Indies or north to New Hampshire, and there was no real excellence on the campus. And Johnny said to me during that discussion, "I don't think I would like that." And I said, "Then you shouldn't offer me the position, because I'm telling you those are the first two things that I would do." I don't think you believe me, but I did. Anyway, the offer was made. I accepted it, but I did go to the West Indies, and I did go to New Hampshire. And Johnny backed me. I don't know that he was entirely happy, but he backed me, and we've laughed about that since then. Because then we began to invest those resources at the campus.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, then he was the one who interviewed you.
He was, yeah.
George Williams?
Williams was actually on the faculty of the Marine Sciences Research Center at that time.
At that time.
Mm-hmm. And it was clear to both George and to me that the kind of center I wanted to develop was not one that he would be entirely comfortable in. And so we worked out a very amicable arrangement where he moved from marine sciences to ecology and evolution, and we were given a line to fill.
I see. Good. All right. Six is, why did you come? What factors are most important in your decision?
I guess I came because of the opportunity that I saw to do something.
Almost a completely blank.
Yeah. And the other thing is, if you look at the region, it's a great region for a coastal oceanographic institution. So I saw opportunity, and in my discussions with John Toll and Alec Pond, now Sydney was on sabbatical then, but in my discussions with Alec and Johnny, I had the distinct impression that Stony Brook was a place that if you had good ideas and lots of energy and didn't get discouraged easily, you could make important things happen. And those were the reasons that I came.
Just by way of background, I think the first time that Harry Porter in 62 got the heads of the four university centers together, and we were talking about what programs each center would have that the others would not. It had already been decided, apparently, that Buffalo would have limnology and Stony Brook would be the place for the marine sciences. And this was 62. After that, shortly after that, came the crisis in the Flax Pond dredging matter. And from there, with the urging of the village of Oldfield, please do something about that particular problem. We went to the central office, and I guess through Larry Murray and Harry, they worked it out with the Department of Environmental Conservation at the university, and the department would split the cost. The department would have the title because the university apparently couldn't have the title for some reason or other that I never did understand. But the university was given an easement over the whole area. And all but the about 7 or 8 acres to the east were bought from Bickman. Maybe the whole of it was bought, but I'm not quite sure. But I wanted to keep the goodwill of the village people who were on the east side so they could do their clamming and some voting, if it wouldn't interfere with the research projects that were conceivably outlined.
That was a very important acquisition.
Yep.
And as you know, originally the plan was that when DEC built its laboratory, there was to be a companion building for the university just to the west of it. That was never built. And then I guess about 7 or 8 years ago, we negotiated with DEC a 25-year no-cost lease where their laboratory became available to the university. And we then agreed that we would make a certain percentage of the office and lab space available for them. But we now operate and manage that facility. Mm-hmm. And we have another 18 years or something on that 25-year.
Mm-hmm. Well, Wallace was a great guy,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
And we owe a lot to him on the matter of the initial building.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Well, he's gone. Okay. What was your understanding of the purposes behind the creation of Stony Brook?
Well, I got most of my understanding now from John Toll and from Alec Pond and then from Sydney. And so there was never any ambiguity in my understanding that we were created to become an internationally known research university.
Right.
And that fit nicely with the Marine Science and Research Center, which really was started as an organized research unit. As you mentioned, it was agreed early on that there would be one in the SUNY system and that it would be at Stony Brook. And it was created by a resolution of the Board of Trustees, and I think it was 67 or 68. And as an organized research unit with no educational mandate at all, that obviously has changed over the years. So my understanding was that we were to become an outstanding research university.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Give us your impression of Stony Brook when you first came, the campus, the people, the leadership, and the spirit.
I loved it. Campus was in disarray. Lots of things were happening. You had the impression that it was a university on the move, and that no matter how serious the obstacles were, they were only going to slow us down. They weren't going to stop us from what we wanted to do. That there was strong leadership that had a vision of where the university
ultimately should be.
Should be.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you could argue with some of the short-term strategies, but I think the vision was clear. It was the correct one. And I think that all of us owe an enormous debt to all of the early leaders of the university, all of you, for putting us on that course, because if it hadn't been accomplished then, you couldn't do it now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think we just slowed down in our push a few years too early. Because we aren't yet that world-class public research university. And I think that what happens over the next few years is going to determine whether we're going to make it into that ranks with Berkeley, Michigan, Illinois, and so on, or whether we're going to be comfortably nestled in that second tier. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be difficult, for lots of reasons, to make that next move. And I think it can't be made in the absence of a significant increase in the size of the university. Mm-hmm. I think we're much too small to be a first-rate comprehensive public university. And because of that, I think the growth that's going to be required is going to make our job more difficult over the next 10 years than, for example, Buffalo. Buffalo's made major strides in the last 5 or 6 years, and they operate from a stronger base in terms of numbers and diversity of programs than we do. We still have a better faculty, but we have to grow and continue, I think, to diversify and have greater strength across the board. It can't just be in the areas that we have it now.
Mm-hmm. By across the board, you mean humanities and social sciences?
Humanities and social sciences. I think we also have to increase the number of professional programs that we have. Excuse me.
Such as?
Well, as you know, right now we're looking into the idea of having a law school, whether it makes sense. That's something that's been looked into before.
Yes.
I think we have to do the same in journalism and communications. We have a College of Engineering that is underdeveloped and is certainly the overall quality is not what it should be. We have a Harriman School that's much too small and undistinguished, I think. So we're going to have to, I think, develop some of those professional programs. At the same time, we're increasing strength in the humanities and fine arts and in areas of social and behavioral sciences.
Anything about the quality of the faculty at that time?
I was very impressed with the quality of the faculty that I came in contact with in the university. Now, in 74 when I came, Marine Sciences Research Center was not very well integrated into the campus. We were on the South Campus, we were small, we weren't very distinguished, we had only a master's degree program that was small, not very highly regarded, and so the contacts with the faculty that I had and that our faculty in marine sciences had were not as extensive as they should have been. There were several of us that came about that time, though, that came to build something. David Cohen came shortly after that to build neurobiology, and so he and I got to know each other quite well. And the people that I knew in positions of leadership like that, I was very impressed, very impressed with.
Do you have anything to do with Melvin Simpson?
No.
Biochemistry?
Very little.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we had, one of our first jobs in marine sciences, though, was to establish that we were a strong program so that we would be accepted by some of the other departments, like ecology and evolution and earth and space sciences. And
how did you go about doing that?
Well, we did it in two ways. One was to reach out and to tell them what the plans that we had in mind. But the most important thing, I guess, is that we began to recruit faculty that they could look at, and there was no question in their minds that those are faculty that they would like to have associations with. And so they began to ask us to have joint appointments for some of our faculty. And the other interesting thing was that in 74, 75, all of our master's students had to take courses in ecology and evolution. I remember they all had to take biometry, and it was either given by Sokol or by Rolf, depending upon the year. We insisted that they take the course because it's a superb course. Mm-hmm. And they didn't do very well. And so I met with our students and I made it clear to them that we expected them to work hard and do well, and we began to raise our entrance requirements also for our students. Mm-hmm. And then it was several years later that I got a note from Bob Sokol saying that now, when he did the statistical analysis of the MSRC students and compared them with the ecology and evolution students in the course, their performance was indistinguishable statistically. Mm-hmm. So we knew then we'd come.
You would have had arrived.
We'd arrive, that's yeah. Right. And that was kind of fun. I enjoyed those early days. It was a great challenge.
Yeah.
And we went from a faculty of, I guess we had six in 1974. Now we have a faculty on state lines of 28, maybe 29. We went from having a master's program with 20-some students in, all of whom were part-time, to now with a master's and a PhD program where we have roughly 100 students, 85 of whom are full-time, and the other 10 or 15, are completing PhD dissertations or master's theses, and maybe part-time.
Well, that means you had support, not only locally, but up in Albany.
We had support, but it was the local support that was most important, because even though we were one of the SUNY-wide centers, only once in the history of MSRC was there ever a position assigned directly to MSRC by SUNY Central, and that was done by Don O'Dowd. And it was interesting. I tried every year. We only succeeded once, though. And I saw Don O'Dowd at the Nostalgic meeting in Dallas a few weeks ago, and we were talking about that.
So who is he?
Don O'Dowd was the vice chancellor, and he had come to SUNY from the University of Michigan at Oakland University in Michigan, rather, and was only at SUNY for a few years, and now he's the chancellor of the University of Alaska System. And he has an interesting perspective on SUNY and the SUNY system as a whole and its inability. He got very frustrated about its inability to make tough decisions. And he got to Alaska just at several years ago when the problem with the bottom fell out of the oil prices. So here's a guy, the chancellor of the system, just arriving, and he had to trim that budget. It started off being about 40%, and they reduced it to 20. They had to reduce it finally by 20-some percent. He closed campuses. He combined campuses. And we were talking recently, why can't SUNY do that? And neither one of us had a very good answer.
It's politics. It's political.
Yeah.
The university is not free. to run itself.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And even though it has a board of trustees, it's relatively independent of the regents. The legislature, the governor's office, and even some of the trustees themselves have ties that in critical situations become more important than the welfare of the institution.
Yeah, I think the university system is not well served by all of this.
No.
It's going to be interesting to see with the present budget what happens, because I think if it's a very bad budget at all, Stony Brook can't take any more across the board cuts, in my opinion, without really setting us back in our development as a major research university. And so I think if Stony Brook is given any significant cut, we're going to have to do it selectively again. And that'll be painful. That was one of the things I remember most vividly, because I came in the summer of 74, and it was in January of 75. I was at home, and Johnny Toll called me late at night and said, "Jerry, I got bad news for you. I know we brought you here 6 months ago to build a first-rate center, and now we're going to have to eliminate some units. We're going to eliminate at least one organized research unit, and the Marine Sciences Research Center is high on my list. So you have about a month to convince me why it shouldn't be eliminated."
And I'm surprised at that coming from Johnny.
Well, no, and it was interesting, though, because then I began to think. And I had come from Johns Hopkins. First thing I did was write a couple of proposals, set up a lab. I got a couple $100,000 in grant money. I'd hired some technicians. And everything for me as an individual was going nicely. But I hadn't given the kind of thought that I needed to give in terms of what we wanted our Marine Sciences Research Center to be at that point. And from that time on, I've realized that how successful Jerry Schubel was as a researcher really wasn't very important to the Marine Sciences Research Center. The thing that was most important was how effective I was as the scientific administrator or as the dean director of that unit.
The leader of a group.
And so I've never forgotten that lesson. And we then spent a lot of time asking, how can we develop a center, a Marine Sciences Center at Stony Brook, that will be distinctive and be distinguished? The last thing the world needed was another second-rate Woods Hole or Scripps. And there are enough of them around. And so we did not want to be in that shadow. And we then looked at the region, and there are two things emerged. First of all, the world did need a first-rate coastal oceanographic institution. And if you look at Long Island, there's no place in the United States where you have as rich a diversity of coastal environments as we have here in such a limited geographical area. Estuary, barbelled estuary like Great South Bay, Long Island Sound, the Hudson, barrier islands, wetlands, both fresh and marine. Everything is here, open ocean waters within 20 miles. So that we quickly settled on coastal. And the other thing that we have developed over the years is the acknowledgement that we didn't only want to be good in basic research, but we wanted to be known as an institution that would use the advances in knowledge to help solve practical problems. And again, if you look at the Long Island area, there's no better place in the world to do this because we have so many problems. And it's the ideal natural laboratory, because if you look at that map, you know, if you go to New York Harbor or the New York Bight, the impacts of society are really severe. But the further east you go, the impacts decline rapidly. So there's a marked gradient. You get out in eastern Long Island Sound, and it's some of the most pristine water you can find in the United States. So those two themes we've worked on over the years, coastal and the using science to solve practical problems. And we've always kept our eye on that target. And one of the reasons that I decided that I was going to resume the leadership of the Marine Sciences Research Center now in January, rather than waiting until I leave this office next summer, is that I can see us departing from those two goals. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to see that happen, because we could quickly become just another undistinguished Marine Center, and we're not going to let that happen.
Okay. All right. On 13,
let me back up to you in terms of the expectations.
All right. Okay. 11?
Yeah. My expectations were that we did have the opportunity to create that world-class Marine Center. I'm not sure that Johnny really agreed with that initially. In fact, he stole me. Marine sciences were not a very high priority with him. Yeah. It was something that he thought was essential because of where we were. But I'm not sure he thought we would ever achieve it. And it went after he left and went to Maryland, he decided when he got to Maryland that the Marine program at Maryland, which was not very distinguished, was going to become a top priority at the University of Maryland. And he
borrowed some ideas from you.
He put resources into it, and he's done a fantastic job there. It was a few years ago, I was made the offer of being the head of the Marine program and turned it down to stay here because I never felt we'd finished developing our own center. So my expectations were that we were going to be world class. And most of my expectations have been fulfilled in that sense. And I don't really have any disappointments.
Good. How much were you able to get those in the central office, or some of the people in the legislature, or somebody like Ken LaValle, for instance, to understand what you had in mind?
No trouble at all. We've had the partnership with Ken and other legislators, Jim Lack, Owen Johnson, Bianchi, Trunzo, you can go right down the list. Over the years, they've been our greatest allies. And so what we were always able to do, about every other year when we wanted, we decided the only way we're going to build the Marine Sciences Research Center is with new initiatives, new programs, new centers, new institutes within it. And we would work a deal with the legislator that they would provide some funding as long as the university would cost share. So we started a new unit in Beach and Nearshore Processes.
And what?
Beach and Nearshore Processes.
All right.
We started one in Fisheries and Aquaculture. We started one in Waste Management. And in every case, the legislature appropriated new funds, and there was an agreement made with the university administration that if the legislature provided funds, the university would cost share in those. So we've always had that good partnership. There were some disagreements over the years with SUNY Central in terms of them approving us dealing directly with the legislature, which, as you know, they don't like. But we've had good relationships. I don't think there's anything I've enjoyed more than the partnership that we've had with the legislature.
Good. Well, that's great. Is there, within the central office, any particular individual who is knowledgeable in your field or in, let's say, the biological sciences?
Well, let's see. Over the years, we worked closely with Don O'Dowd, Jerry Komisar, Jim Callis.
Callis, how do you spell his name?
K-A-L-A-S, and he's kind of the liaison with the Research Foundation.
I see.
And at times with Cliff Wharton. Bruce Johnstone hasn't been around long enough for us to make that that connection. But the relationships were always good.
That's good. I don't know now how they're organized in there. Who is responsible? Do they have somebody responsible for the university centers?
Not really, no. But now, in the most recent reorganization, they have a provost, and that's Joe Burke. And so in many ways, Joe has that responsibility. And we've worked closely with him in terms of the whole graduate research initiative. He was the person within SUNY Central that took the responsibility. And then the provost at each of the campuses had that, shared that responsibility with him.
Yes. Within the legislature, aside from the committees on education, is there anyone or any committee with a responsibility, let's say, for the sciences?
Not for the sciences, but there have been your committees, environmental conservation, which we've interacted with. There's a new one now that deals with solid waste that we've interacted with. There's one with groundwater. And then within the last year and a half, there's one that has been set up to deal with Long Island Sound. And so we have a lot of contact with them. None specifically for the sciences, though.
In the federal government, what about the USGS?
Well, USGS, we have received funding from them, and they have mandates for certain studies, which are largely done of estuaries and rivers, particularly.
Groundwater?
And groundwater, right. Most of those, though, are done in-house. So USGS is an unusual federal agency in that most of they have an enormous technical scientific competency in-house. And they do many of their studies by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite different from EPA or NSF.
I remember they were doing groundwater studies in 48, 49, Brookhaven.
Yep. They have a branch in Syosset. And it's probably the best groundwater modeling unit in the United States. They really are superb.
Mm-hmm. What about your students? Where do you get them?
Okay, now, we have about 100 graduate students, as I mentioned, from all over the world. Foreign students account for about 50%, maybe just a little less, and 50% from the United States, all over the United States. So there's a very broad draw. We started an undergraduate minor, and that was started about 2.5 years ago, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember how many students are in that, but in terms of, we must have, I guess it has to be 100 or more FTEs. It's fairly small.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking now about the possibility of creating a double major. I don't know whether that will happen. Oceanography generally is not a very good major because it doesn't lead to, as an undergraduate, it doesn't lead to jobs, and it's not the best preparation to go into graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
Where it has worked, it's been a double major. So somebody majors in biology or chemistry or physics, and then they also double major in marine science.
Anybody come to you from economics, for instance?
We've never had anyone from economics. We draw from physics, chemistry, biology, geology, engineering, mathematics, and we're just beginning to have enough confidence that we're going to add a component for people who want to deal with marine policy. And we're doing our first test case right now. It's someone who got a master's degree from us, working now on a PhD, and has been an employee of the Long Island Regional Planning Board for a number of years. And so his background is stronger in areas of like economics, political science, and so on.
Mm-hmm. I lived for 5 years at Savo and had friends who were involved with the Blue Point oyster industry.
Right.
Well, now, Lee Koppelman has come.
Lee's come, yes.
What is his position now?
We created a new center with the help of the legislature called the Center for Regional Policy Studies.
Mm-hmm.
And Lee is the director of it. And
within the Harriman College?
No, it's a freestanding center.
I see.
And reports directly to the provost's office.
Mm-hmm.
Lee and I have been partners on projects over the years, and we'll continue to be partners.
Yeah.
I think it's a very important addition to the university.
Yes,
because, again, it's a way of telling the Long Island region that we feel that we have an important contribution,
role.
Yeah. That's right, in the region.
Right. Oh, he's an excellent person.
Yes, absolutely.
Excellent.
Have you interviewed Lee?
Tomorrow.
Okay.
Not tomorrow. Wait a minute. Tuesday.
Good. He's a good one, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've known him a long time.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. You have been covering a number of these subjects. Do you want to summarize again number 14?
Well, let's see.
Or do you think you have...
Yeah, is that date correct? Because if it is...
No.
All right,
no.
Because I hadn't accomplished anything by 71.
No.
It didn't come till 74.
Right.
Well, I think that... Well, first of all, I couldn't have accomplished anything if I hadn't had the support of the academic vice president, the executive vice president, and the president. No
right.
question about
right.
it. Because when I came, the resources were limited, a faculty of six, as I mentioned. And so I think that I would give most of the credit to those individuals to whom I reported. I was apparently successful enough in convincing them that it was a good investment.
That's the important thing, really.
But if you don't have someone who is responsive and who sees opportunities and is prepared to listen,
right.
then you can't accomplish anything.
Right.
And over the years, Johnny and Alec and Sydney and then Homer, those were the people that I interacted with most.
Homer Neal,
yeah. Right. And I've had a good relationship with all of them. And Jack Marburger, having come from Maryland, has an appreciation for the importance of marine science.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When I was talking with Roger Revelle, he mentioned your name at this, and wanted to know how you were doing. How long have you known him?
Well, let's see. I've really only known him at all well for, I guess, about 5 years. I've known of Roger for a long time, and I've met him off and on, but I really didn't know him. And we put him on an advisory committee that we have at the Marine Sciences Research Center a few years ago. And there was an interesting connection there, because Roger Revelle was Don Pritchard's major advisor. Don Pritchard was my major advisor. And so when we got together at the first advisory committee meeting, we took a photograph with Roger, Don, and me. And it's over the last few years, Roger and I have gotten to know each other. He's a remarkable guy.
He certainly is.
He built the Scripps Institution of Oceanography and has had a major influence on the whole development of the,
right.
University
of California
at San Diego.
San Diego.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Quite a guy. A lot of respect for him. He's had
one of the colleges is named for him.
Yes. Yeah.
From Revelle College. With a focus on the sciences.
Right.
He was... I was delighted to have a chance to meet him, and then surprised that he wanted to meet again with me after we'd had our first session.
He's an interesting guy. His health in the last 6 to 8 months has gone really down.
Yeah.
And so his doctors don't want him to travel across the country anymore. And that's going to be hard for him, because up until 6 months ago, he was all over the world.
Yeah. Right.
Roger and I have talked about the differences between how San Diego developed and Stony Brook developed, and I don't necessarily agree with him on all of that. He at times has expressed to me that he feels that San Diego had their sights higher in terms of the faculty that they've recruited. I'm not so sure I agree with that. Our Stony Brook's faculty, I think, is awfully good, and he may be, if you compare area by area, they're better than we are in some areas, but we're also much better than they are in some areas. So they've done a better job of making the University of California, San Diego, attractive to undergraduates than we have. They get better undergraduates, they seem to be happier, and they also have done a much better job of taking care of their facilities than we do. And maybe it's partly, I suppose there are a lot of factors, differences in climate.
That's one thing.
Better construction may be there than we've had. So their campus is more attractive and it's better maintained. And
it's got a wonderful location.
That's a beautiful location.
Beautiful location. But they also have problems with the diversity of the student body's origin.
Oh, yes, right.
Yeah. He pointed that out at the end. The WASPs are being outnumbered.
All right. Yeah.
Well, let's see. I think the last question there gets back to individuals. You have said a lot about Johnny. What about Alec?
Well, see, I think the remarkable thing about Stony Brook was the team that Johnny, Alec, and Sidney. Because I've never known anyone who could take institutional data and analyze them better in terms of being able to craft persuasive arguments than Alec Pond. Mm-hmm. Johnny Toll was able to take those arguments and deliver them in a better way than Alec could. And Sidney was a superb academic vice president, in my opinion. He knew what quality was. So it was an important team that I think worked closely together. And they knew each other's strengths and weaknesses. They capitalized on their strengths. They got out of each other's way in other areas. There was enormous respect and trust, so they weren't second-guessing each other, at least not very often. I think that was the strength. There are a lot of valuable lessons, I think, in the kind of management they exercise.
Johnny took me on trial the first year. Theoretically, I could have gone back to Albany. And Sam asked me if I were interested to go elsewhere in the system. And I was lukewarm about doing it because Ann and I had been at Brookhaven. We had friends from those days. And I was involved with the university by the time Johnny came and didn't want to leave. And Johnny was willing to take me on for a year to see how it worked out. And he was the easiest person to work with and for that I had experienced in my 10 years as being a dean.
That's interesting.
Yeah. He was an open personality. Yeah. He was an energetic one. He did not carve, and he assumed that you were an ally and were going down the same road he was going, and it was easier to work with him on that basis.
I always found that true also.
Yeah,
I enjoyed those years a great deal.
And I had a hand in finding a wife for him.
And they're still together.
Yes. Yes. Right. Okay. Is there anything else any question I haven't asked you? Anything you want to say?
Well, I guess I would just add that I come back to a point we talked about earlier. I think that we're in an important transition at Stony Brook, and I think what happens over the next few years is going to have a long an impact over a long time on this university, and so I hope.